You know that I feel like it's important to express yourself. You got to put your true self out there. And those classic Crocs, clogs, and sandals let you do that.
That's right. Between the rainbow of colors and the Jibbitz charms, you can create a unique look. And I mean literally, no one else will have shoes exactly like yours.
Hey, you know it doesn't get any more comfortable than the Croc clogs and sandals. They are just the perfect blend of comfort and creativity.
Visit Crocs.com to explore the latest styles and Jibbitz charms.
All right, ladies, let's be real. Who here actually enjoys shaving their legs? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought so. And get this. Nair, yes, Nair, the OG that I used for years, has now leveled up. And they have these new sensational shower creams and body creams that smell amazing. My personal favorite, coconut oil and vitamin E because it's gentle on my skin. And down to that body cream scent, baby, rich cocoa butter and vitamin E. A modern take on indulgent and classic femininity. Smell for yourself. Try the reformulated Nair body and shower creams available at retailers nationwide and online.
After 11 years almost of being a father and four children, my wife still believes I don't know what I'm doing when it comes to these kids.
Dead ass.
Oh, what? You just gonna agree with that?
I just have to say that moms just be knowing all the time. It's the instinct. Deadass. Hey, I'm Kadeen.
And I'm DeVal.
And we're the Ellises.
You may know us from posting funny videos with our boys.
And reading each other publicly as a form of therapy.
Wait, I make you need therapy?
Most days.
Wow.
Oh, and one more important thing to mention, we're married.
Yes, sir, we are. We created this podcast to open dialogue about some of life's most taboo topics.
Things most folks don't want to talk about.
Through the lens of a millennial married couple. Deadass is a term that we say every day. So when we say deadass, we're actually saying facts. 100. The truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. We about to take pillow talk to a whole new level.
Deadass starts right now.
This is how crazy mothers be, right?
Where are you going with this, DeVal?
Mothers don't even believe that the mothers that mothered them, their own mothers, know how to mother their kids as good as them, even though their mothers raised them. Case in point. Mimi has helped us take care of all four of our kids. We now have Dakota, right? Every time Mimi goes to hand Dakota off to Kadeen, it's a fucking standoff. Okay? Mimi comes in with Dakota, well-greased, well-powdered.
Oh, yeah.
Bathed, baby smelling good, wrapped like a triple-deck burrito because she got mad blankets on and the heat on 85, right? And the minute she walks into the living room, right, it's like, Kadeen stands up. She stares her mother in the face, grabs Dakota, unwraps the first blanket, throws the blanket on the couch. They don't lose eye contact. Then she unwraps the second blanket, throws it on the floor, takes the last blanket, throws it over the shoulder, snatches Dakota, and then walks away. And I'm just like, why it gotta be like that? Like, why is it a battle to see who can mother the best? Like, like, why y'all just can't, like, give each other some, like, accolades, flowers while y'all alive, and just say, hey, mom, your version of mothering is just as good as mine. No, it is a battle. And I just be sitting there like,
man, listen. All right, you know what? Let's get into karaoke and then we come back to the story time, because we can unpack that whole story time, okay?
Let's unpack it.
Let's unpack it.
We're going to bring y'all to karaoke, right? And this karaoke is brought to you by my wife.
He likes it my way. My way.
No, he don't.
What I say goes. I'm in control. Ah, I love karaoke time. That might be one of my new favorites. But anyway, let's go into a break real quick. We're going to get into some ads and we'll be back.
Hey, what's good, y'all? I think it's important for you to understand why Black representation in media is important. It's important because the media represents how people view us. And it's important that they understand that Black people are not a monolithic people.
That is a fact. And the next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truth.
Black Stories, Black Truth is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths.
Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now they are the story.
In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience.
Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts.
During the break, let's quickly talk about a couple things that are important to most people I know. Comfort and style. Crocs, classic clogs, and sandals have both covered.
When I'm talking about style, I mean personal style. There are just so many colors and so many Jibbitz charms that you can add to the Crocs to make them unique. You can dress up your Crocs to match your mood, to match your personality, to fit the occasion, and you can change them up day to day.
I mean, ultimately, you can stand out from the crowd in a way that only you can because it's your personal style. And now, let's talk about comfort. You know, it doesn't get better than Crocs, clogs, and sandals when it comes to being comfortable. Style and comfort are usually a trade-off, but here, they're a package deal. It's like you have cushions on your feet. Soft, stylish, personalized, colorful cushions.
That's right. So why wait? Head over to Crocs.com today and experience the comfort and style of Crocs classic clogs and sandals for yourself. Your feet will thank you. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Y'all, let me tell you, after the Love Against the World tour, my social battery is depleted, drained. No energy. How do you feel, babe?
I don't know. You know, it can be easy for people to ignore their social battery and spread themselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up one after another in the wintertime.
That's a fact. What's the right amount of socializing for you? And how do you recharge after that? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need some more alone time like me.
You know what? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery.
So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/deadass today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp. HELP.com/deadass.
All right, ladies, let's be real. Who here actually enjoys shaving their legs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought so.
And get this, Near, yes, Near, the OG that I used for years, has now leveled up. And they have these new sensational shower creams and body creams that smell amazing. My personal favorite, coconut oil and vitamin E because it's gentle on my skin. And down to the body cream, rich cocoa butter and vitamin E body cream, which is a modern take on indulgent and classic femininity. Okay? It works in as little as 3 minutes, no nicks, no cuts, and the smooth skin lasts days longer than shaving. Nair's new sensational shower and body creams are free of all those nasty chemicals, so you can feel good about what you're putting on your skin. Have a me time moment with Nair, the number one hair removal brand. Smell for yourself. Try the reformulated Nair body and shower creams available at retailers nationwide and online.
Yo,
period. Let me tell That's just what it is.
This is a big battle in our house.
That's still just what it is.
Four kids.
Because there's always constantly evolving things. So back to story time. You know, let me unpack the burrito that is Dakota, okay, and my mom. So, you know, my mom claims that she says, anytime I ask her about it, I'm from the old school. This is how we used to do things back in the day. Clearly, back in the day, as in when she was raising me, and that's been a couple decades ago, well, right? Mm,
yes, yeah. almost four. Four score? No. What's four score?
Shut up.
4 decades? No, when?
Anyway, I'm going to be fabulous as I push that number. But you know, so clearly she feels like what she does is the right way and the only way.
Well, you made it here, didn't you?
Right. And didn't I did make it here.
Okay.
Safe and sound. Well, I'm all right. Well, you know, skin is nice and hydrated because I've been greased.
Yes. You always smell good.
Sufficiently over the years.
Yes.
But it's the thing with Dakota and the blanket. So she'll have the house, first of all, like you said, on like Jamaica. That's what the thermostat says. And then after she brings him to me, clearly the baby's starting to sweat profusely and may die of heat stroke because he's wrapped in about
four blankets. He won't die because you're still here.
Four blankets. But some days I'd be a little off. You never know. But he has on four blankets. And then under the four blankets, there's the fleece onesie that he's also in addition to the
cold
onesie that's inside.
It's cold and
with
flu season.
Socks also. But so I get it. It's cold and flu season. Yeah. But to go back to your initial point, every mom feels like the way they do things is the right and the only way. And it may have a lot to do with the fact that these babies have been in our bodies for 9+ months, sometimes less, and then they're maybe in a NICU and having to be tended to for, you know, months or weeks, and we just feel like we know what's best. There's a thing that happens when you have a baby in it. The baby goes from your inner womb to the outer world that you feel like, now I can no longer protect this child.
There's a thing that happens?
100%.
Called birth. That's not a thing. We know what happens.
No, we know birth happens, but the thing is that we feel like now we can't protect this child.
You can't.
100% the way we did before when they were in utero. Mm-hmm. So that being said, every mom, I'm sure, has their process. Some people rely on that maternal instinct to kick in, which I think is definitely a real thing. But does the paternal instinct kick in for you?
Yes. And there are some interesting studies. I'm going to read some of them because Tribble found them for me. Okay, listen.
He purposely made sure Tribble found something to support his argument today.
No, I didn't. I didn't say Tribble find something to support this. I just said I just need some stats about divorce and kids.
That's all I need. Stats. Right? He sounded like Cairo.
Facts and stats. Shout out to my boy, Cairo. A staggering 67% of couples in the study reported a decline in relationship satisfaction after the arrival of the first baby. The decline typically shows up between 6 months for women and 9 months for men after the baby comes home. The divorce rate for couples with children is as much as 40% lower than those without children.
Oh.
Mainly because most people will stay together.
Stick it together for the kids. Yep.
76%. Half of all children in the United States will witness the ending of a parent's marriage. According to various studies, the three most common causes of divorce are conflict, arguing, irretrievable breakdown in the relationship, lack of commitment, infidelity, and lack of physical intimacy. The least common reasons are lack of shared interests and incompatibility between partners. Now,
interesting.
This is the reason why I brought those stats up. We just had dinner with friends of ours, couple married, just had their second child, and they were speaking to us about the issues they have in their marriage. 95% of the issues that they have in their marriage are around the children, how they raise and care for their children individually. I have another friend who just had a baby, same exact conversation he's having with me from husband to husband, right? And like I said, I'm not an expert, but this is what I've deduced, right? I've asked both men and both wives what seems to be the issue. It all stems back to the wives feeling like, you said, the baby was inside of me. I am the baby's mom. I had to be in control and to cover this baby from everything for 10 months. Now the baby's outside of me. I cannot just turn this baby over to you or anybody and say, here, I trust you. It's just difficult.
It is very difficult.
I agree with that. And it's damn near impossible because anything that comes out of my body, I don't trust it with nobody except for shit.
Say anything like what?
But I understand that stance. You understand?
No,
you
understand? I completely understand. And I agree with you 110%. And I'm glad you acknowledge that because.
But there's a but. It takes two people to make a baby. And fathers have to be allowed to parent. Right? I'll give you another example that I've noticed. When I was in Brooklyn mentoring for 10 years, 75% of the kids, three out of the four, didn't have father figures in their lives. And a lot of the moms that I dealt with were, and I only say dealt with because they were like, these were like our family, our clients. Yeah. And I don't even like still to call like them family. Clients because they were more than clients. You know, mm-hmm. these were our, this was our community, our village of mm-hmm. people. Over 400 athletes, you would say 300 of them didn't have fathers in their lives. The vast majority of these women were really, really strong, great women. But I did notice a pattern with them. When it came to their children, very different to when it was boys and girls, but when it came to their children, they had a fear of relinquishing power to the people that they claimed they trusted with their children. Mm. They questioned everything, they challenged everything, but then said, I trust you to do this.
Right.
And at the same time, wasn't allowing these people to do their job. And then complained to these people when they couldn't get the job done and didn't realize how much of a detriment they were to that relationship. Mm. I've seen them do this with coaches. I've seen them do this with teachers, principals, mentors. And then I said to myself, I can't imagine how difficult it had to have been to be this child's father, trying to be in this child's life. Because remember, I told you a bunch of stories of men who were trying to be present and were constantly pushed aside. You know what I'm saying? And being told, I got this, I don't need you. But then being told, why aren't you fathering?
Well, I wonder what it is. Is it a control thing? Is it a thing where the moms are thinking, let me vet these people around my children to see that they are indeed going to be, you know, fulfilling something for my children versus being a detriment to them? Like, does it ultimately just boil down to control? Because I feel like that was some of the issues that some of our friends have expressed, that it was a matter of just wanting to have control over the situation
and
versus
absolutely.
Genuinely feeling like the father or the mother, depending, is equipped enough to handle their responsibilities.
This is why I really want to talk about this topic, because I think it's a two-person responsibility, right? Mm-hmm. The moms have to realize that you're going to have to learn to relinquish some control to people that you trust, right? Mm-hmm. But then dads are going to have to learn that you can't just walk away because this woman has not relinquished that control to you immediately or in real time or when you want it relinquished. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't get involved with people's relationships. That was not my concern. But when I spoke to parents who were co-parenting, I did notice that pattern, right? The moms wanted the dads to parent them the way they wanted them to be parented. Mm-hmm. And the dads were like, if you're not going to let me parent the way I want to parent, I don't need to be involved. You have it all. And that's when I started to, I was like, this needs to be discussed.
So at that point, it's like the father wants to just wash his hands and be like, all right, well, if you have it under control, then don't ask me for nothing.
Sometimes it was the fathers washing their hands, and sometimes it was the moms creating distance on purpose as a way to keep control.
Right.
Because as the kids get older, then the kids start to say, well, I want to do this with my dad. Mm-hmm. And then I watched sometimes the moms would find a way to create a wedge so that and it was a fear thing. It wasn't like just a malicious, I'm going to make this guy suffer or make my... It was really a fear, like, I have to do something because I don't believe that he is capable of caring for my son or daughter as good as I can, so let me create a wedge. And I used to tell the moms, like, do you realize that you're creating... Like, do you realize? Like, I've watched moms at times tell parents, tell dads the wrong time to come to sessions. Mm. On purpose.
Yikes.
And then when they get there, the dad would be like, yo, you told me this time. And then she would create a riff. And then I would be like, this is a pattern. I'm watching you, dude. You cannot do this. Mm-hmm. And then try to hold him responsible for not being there.
So now my question or my thought at this point is it a control thing, or is there just like some sort of deep-rooted vindictive nature that this woman has because of maybe her relationship with the father? So does it have anything really to do with the children at this point, or is it something that is stemming from
the
control over the kids?
The fear, and that's a great question, the fear of turning over your kids to someone like this was created because of the way that man handled them. You know what I'm saying? You mishandled me.
Right.
So how can I trust you with, I can understand.
Yeah.
And this is the whole point, is like, when you sit back and dissect the entire scope of the family unit, from the outside, not being, you know, being extremely objective, because I was trying to be objective as a mentor and as a trainer.
Right. And then dealing with two parents
because I'm trying to,
that are not even dealing with each other.
Right. And I'm trying to find what's in the best interest of the child. Right. I started to notice a pattern, and it was just like, okay, you don't trust him. You don't trust him not because of how he parents. You don't trust him because of how he was as a boyfriend. Mm-hmm. So since you don't trust him because of how he was as a boyfriend, you don't trust him as a father. And since you don't trust him as a father, and you notice, and I've noticed this especially with the boys, as the boys got older, they got closer to their fathers. The women created a wedge. And I had a mom, and for reasons you know I can't, because these are people who have confided in us, mm-hmm. have said to me, I did that on purpose because I know for a fact he's going to break my son's heart. Mm. And I don't want to watch him do that.
Right, because of his inconsistency or his patterns and stuff in the past.
And I'm saying, well, you do realize that you're breaking your son's heart.
Right.
And they couldn't even wrap their mind around the fact that they were doing that. Because mm-hmm. they were saying, like, I'm doing what's in the best interest of my son. He'll thank me later.
Right.
And it all goes back to those infant stages mm-hmm. of the baby is inside and yeah. I'm the best one that can take care of it. So I create a wedge between everyone and my child so that I'm the sole person.
So, well, and mom is also too kind of like that buffer, you know. Like, we just recently learned from someone that we know that they didn't have a relationship with their father for their entire life because their mom.
Yeah.
Was the person that pretty much just kept him away
yeah.
or just pretty much led him to believe that his father wasn't involved or just didn't want to be. And that wasn't the truth. But mm-hmm. again, she felt like, you'll thank me later.
Yeah.
Because he would probably have been inconsistent in and out of the son's life,
mm-hmm.
always breaking his heart.
Mm-hmm.
So she felt like, you know what, to prevent that from happening. But it's crazy because then now as an adult, there's so much to unpack from that.
Yeah.
You know, where I tend to kind of, have now realized that I need to just kind of be open to it. And of course, this happened earlier for us because of Jackson. He's getting mm-hmm. older with every phase of life that our boys encounter. So we have all these different phases between Jackson and Dakota. I've also realized that I've never been a boy. Mm-hmm. I've never been a man.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been a black man.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it's like to exist in mm-hmm. that space in this world. So I feel like I made the best choice possible in choosing a spouse, in choosing a mate, in choosing a partner who would in turn be the father to my children, that I can say, you know what, wholeheartedly, I'm okay with allowing DeVal to father.
Mm-hmm.
But it took some time for me to get there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, when Jackson was a baby and he was younger and little things that I wanted to just kind of, you know, keep him from falling off the bed, for example. You remember the first time mm-hmm. he fell off the bed and I blew a freaking gasket? And
yeah.
I was like, how did you allow this to happen? Now we know with every baby that falls off the bed, it's just another thing that happens. And it's just like, whatever, it happens. But I had to slowly learn to say, DeVal's okay
yeah.
with this baby. I had to go back to work, remember, full time
yeah.
after Jackson. And for the first, I want to say, year and a half of his life, with the exception of the 4 months that I had maternity leave, you were sole caretaker of Jackson.
Yep.
And it was me leaving in the morning and making sure there were post-its everywhere and everything was set up and all that. And I had a whole system going and you pretty much were like, to hell with your system.
Yep.
I did shit the way that I wanted to.
Yep.
And thankfully Jackson made it out to see another day. He's still here with us and thriving and doing well. But I had to know that, and trust that with you, they would be okay and that they needed their father. And as they continue to grow and to encounter different things in life and different
right.
phases, that mom may not be able to speak on certain things because I've never experienced it. So what I struggle with sometimes is towing the line between trying to make sure that I'm involved and that I'm mom who's raising these boys to be self-sufficient, to be respectful and all that, but also to not coddling them too much
right.
or
right.
you know, allowing them to express themselves without feeling like I have to be the one to run to their rescue all the time.
Absolutely.
You know,
and that's what happened with the bed. Kadina and I, this is a funny quick story. Kadina and I had Jackson, he was about 1.5 and he was crawling all around the bed, and I had told Jackson a number of times, stop crawling by the edge of the bed, stop crawling by the edge of the bed, right? So I had told Kadina, I said, yo, let him fall off the bed, he'll be fine. Because it was a low bed in low box spring in my sister Tori's room. She had a real plush carpet. I was like, yo, he falls off the bed, that's going to be the shock he needs to be more careful. If you constantly try to save him, there's going to come a time where he's going to do something that is a little bit more extreme that you can't save him. He may fall down the stairs. He may fall off a cliff, for example. But if he falls off this bed onto the flush carpet and realizes that he can lose his balance, it's a life lesson for him. So I let him fall off the bed. She cursed me out. She was all pissed. But that was my method, right? I also learned through you that there's reasons why moms don't trust dads, right? And that's not the reason why. That was a life lesson. But Kadeem
pointed out, lessons at 1.5.
Hey, you got to start early. Kadeem pointed out certain things to me. She was like, I remember when I was watching Jackson stuff like this, she used to call me all the time. Like, did you feed Jackson? I used to get pissed, like super defensive. Like, I fed him. Like, I know what I got to do. This is my son. I'm not going to let him not eat, right? But then I realized the reason why she used to call and ask me that was because if she doesn't call and ask me if I ate, I won't eat. So imagine you being a woman and you know that you help take care of this man. But now the one that you have to take care of, you're trusting this person to take care of your baby. It can give you anxiety.
Absolutely.
And I never thought about that. I really didn't think about that. I just knew that the same way you said there's a maternal instinct, there's a paternal instinct, right? Mm-hmm. I'll feed my kids and not eat. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I couldn't trust that at the time, though. I was like, they're gonna be out here roughing it.
And I get that. Uh-huh. But there's a lot of couples who don't even get to that point of realization, mm-hmm. because they don't even do any accountability. Mm-hmm. So what they do is they start to just blame their partner. You don't trust me. You don't trust me. You trust my way. Trust my way. And then it's a constant back and forth till it gets to a point where it's just like, yo, I don't want to be arguing and bickering with you no more. And they decide to split up. Mm-hmm. Once you split up, I've noticed this with a lot of the kids, especially in Brooklyn. Kids and parents have separation anxiety, but also, what's the name of the when people leave them all the time?
Oh, you mean when kids always have somebody leaving them?
Yeah. What's it called? What do they develop when kids?
Attachment issues.
So they have attachment issues, yeah. Right? Imagine you're a woman and you're in a relationship, mm-hmm. and you've been with this guy, and every time things go awry. Mm-hmm. The guy flees, mm-hmm. and this has been y'all relationship for years. You happen to get pregnant, and now every time you argue about the kid, he flees. Mm-hmm. What would make this woman trust that man with their kid?
Right.
You understand what I'm saying? And then to me, this is where the accountability has to be for both people. Mm-hmm. Right. You as a man have to understand that it is not okay for you to leave during this early infant stages.
Right.
And as a woman, you have to be accountable to understand that you trusted this person enough to lay down with them and, mm-hmm. and have a baby. Mm-hmm. You have to relinquish some of that control to allow that person to be a father.
And then what happens to those people who didn't necessarily trust this person you laid down with? It just might have been a smash. And then what happens?
Well,
you have a baby, and then you have a baby with somebody you don't even know.
And
that's a whole nother layer of things to unpack.
And I've had to mentor and train people who've dealt with that. And you know, mm-hmm. what I've noticed? I met one of the greatest couples. There was a one-night stand. They had a baby. Mm-hmm. They were friends for a long time, but they were never trying to be like that with each other. Mm-hmm. But they became intimate one night. She got pregnant. They made a concerted effort, mm-hmm. to co-parent, give each other space and time, but it was about communication.
Mm. And it about was, the child, and, ultimately.
Yes, it was never a bickering. And whatever was in the best interest of the child, mm-hmm. was done. Mm. And this young man, I met them when he was 16 years old, academically like off the charts, struggled athletically. He had some issues with toughness because he lived with his mom. So they ended up putting him in prototype because his dad wanted him to play football. Mm. So since his dad wanted him to play football, she was just like, I'm going to get him some training because he was thin. Mm-hmm. And his father was like, oh, he'll learn playing football and stuff like that. So the mom chose to bring him to us. Mm-hmm. The dad was just like, I don't need nobody else to help raise my son. Mm-hmm. But the mom was like, listen, I think this is in his best interest. So the father was like, all right, we'll compromise. If you're going to let him play football, I'll let him do this. Mm-hmm. But that was just a perfect example of two people who had different styles, different ideas, but they spoke on it. Mm. And just like we told our friends, mm-hmm. the way you get through these situations is by constantly having conversations about what you need and what you want out of this relationship with this child. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So me as a father saying, babe, I need you to not call me every hour when you're at work when I have my son. I need you to not do that, right. Because I got this.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? And for you to say, Well, I need you to assure me that my child ate.
That's it. Let me see the empty ass bowl. Let me see that empty ass bottle, because stranger things have happened with you.
Yes. I'm not going to lie. I've gone a whole day and end of the night been like, yo, I didn't eat. Right. So I understood. You know what I'm saying? But I think people have to constantly have conversations and understand that having a conversation isn't always an argument.
Yep. Doesn't have to be a battle.
And having those constant conversations doesn't mean that your marriage is in a rut.
Right. It just provides so much clarity. And then the context, I think, comes from thinking about how each person was raised. Think Ooh. About how much Ooh, yeah. of your background and your childhood and your parents' parenting styles and the environment that you grew up in, that all impacts how you parent.
Yes.
So imagine having two people with completely different ways they were raised, completely different backgrounds, completely different parenting styles, adversity that they've had to encounter, yes. and how that then impacts how they raise their children. Then you're like loading on so many other, you know, things. So
I'm glad you brought that up. I want to just interrupt you real quick to
yeah.
ask you this question, answer this okay. question. Can you give women or moms mm-hmm. three things that they can do to help ease the anxiety mm-hmm. or relinquish the control and say, I'm going to let my partner take care of this? Three things that you've done or noticed. And mm-hmm. and it doesn't have to be your husband or your baby father.
Right.
Or
just, it could be other
this
family
is,
members.
This is someone that I have to trust in this moment, because right. some women don't have someone.
Right.
Some women only have a nanny or only have a sister, only have an aunt. Mm-hmm. What's three things you can tell these women they can do to relinquish that control and trust people?
Gotcha. Well, I think the first thing is something that you said, which we've been saying, only have your children stay with or in the presence of people who you wholeheartedly trust.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's just certain people that, hey, this might be my friend. That's my homegirl. We go yes. to the club. We hang out. We shop. But she would not be equipped to watch my children.
Mm-hmm.
Like, meet people where they are and know what they're capable of. You
I
know?
Agree with that.
So if that's the case, know who it is that you're going to be leaving your children with. So that's number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, if there are things that you're very specific about when it comes to your children, for example, my child can only eat at this certain amount of time for this a certain amount, this time of day. Be specific with your rollout. So you may feel like you're being neurotic, like I used to do mm-hmm. with Post-its. Mm-hmm. You may feel like you're being crazy. But if there's a step-by-step process for people to follow when you leave your children with them, I think that A, eliminates any doubt for the right. person who's now the caretaker.
Right.
And then it gives you the reassurance that you've left everything step-by-step.
Blueprint.
Like a blueprint, exactly, for someone to follow. And then that's number two. And then number three...
Can you give one specifically for women who like struggling with their spouse? Like,
mm-hmm.
because that's what we're getting a lot of these arguments of people who we had a baby together. Now she changed. She acting different.
Right.
Give something. And I want speak to the women, but I want the men to hear it.
So right.
You can say, this is what we can work on. What's
right.
the third one?
The third one I would say is that you need to not downplay or bash the father and his style of doing things, but rather... Mm. Try to have a conversation to understand his mindset of why he did something with the child together. For example, maybe that you're playing roughhouse with the boys, right? Mm-hmm. And you're teaching them how to fight each other, mm-hmm. which is what you do in the house with
the
boys.
Time.
You have Cairo and Kaz fighting each other, Jackson and Cairo. You'll have Jackson sometimes purposely pick on Kaz or Cairo mm-hmm. just because you want to get that toughness built up in them, mm-hmm. right? Because you're sending your kids out into the world and who knows what's going to happen with them. So having the conversation to say, all right, I need to understand your mindset behind why you do this.
Mm-hmm.
That has helped me a lot, because that made me think, okay, DeVal has been a boy. He's been a school age boy.
Mm-hmm.
He's had to deal with bullying. He's had to deal with all these different things that I may not have had to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
So he can foresee a potential of something happening down mm-hmm. the line or in the future with my sons mm-hmm. that I may not be able to talk them through, guide them through, because I just have not walked that walk.
Mm-hmm.
So I think women should be having the conversations with their husband or with their spouse or their child's father to say, hey, I'm seeing that you've been doing it this way. I don't necessarily agree with it. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily think it's right, but I want to really understand why you're doing this or how you arrive at this method of doing it, because okay. it just doesn't make sense to me. And sometimes if clarity happens,
right.
then you have a little bit more, or you'll be more willing to relinquish that control a bit.
If she's willing to be understanding.
Yes.
A lot of times people will ask questions only with the intent to argue or disrupt.
Of course, to argue and don't want to compromise either. Right. You have to be open to compromising. And you have to be, you know, and also too, if that's the case, talk to your children on the side. Pull them to the side and be like, yo, when you was with your father,
see,
what y'all do?
That's such a mom thing. That's such a mom thing to do.
I just want to make sure that everything went well, you know. But no, I think it just the conversations, just like how regular couples have conversations about finances, about plans and goals. That's definitely something that needs to be spoken on for sure.
I got three for the gentleman because these dudes be like pulling their hair out. Like the first thing I would say, the most important thing when your wife is pregnant and you're about to have a kid, take some time to do a deep dive into her family history. Mm-hmm. If you can understand who she is, how her family was raised, how she was raised, then you can understand where some of the anxiety may be coming from. Now that she has her heartbeat outside walking around.
Absolutely.
If you can understand her family history, you can sit back and say, ah, I know why that triggered you. Or I know why you choose to do this with our children. That's number one. Number two, understand that the first year after a woman gives birth, it takes her all of that time to get back. Physically, emotionally, and spiritually. So everything you're going through in this first year, and it said here on the breakdown that most people get divorced between 6 and 9 months after having a baby, that's still within a year. The woman that you're next to right now that just had that baby is not the woman that you proposed to or laid down with or got married to.
Facts.
So understand that it's going to take her time to get back. So when you're saying she's changed, absolutely she's changed because she had to grow a baby, nurture the baby, give birth to the baby, now nurture the baby outside of her body with her body.
Like they say, when a woman has a baby, she's then reborn. So you kind of have to reintroduce yourself to an extent.
So if you have that understanding of that, as a man, you will give your wife or your girlfriend a little bit more grace when it comes to dealing with these issues, as opposed to being like she's being neurotic and ridiculous. Like if you understand that, so that's one is understanding her family history. Two is understanding where she is physically and understanding that where she is. And the last one is this, bro. Yes her to death. And when she leaves, do what you want to do anyway. Because that's what I do. Like.
Well, damn.
No, seriously.
Now I know. I'm never leaving this house again.
No, they all survived. No, but here's the truth, though. People argue, right? Because they just want to be right in the moment, right? So you're telling me all of these things to do with the post-its, and most people will argue, I don't want to do this, I don't want to do this. You know what I did? I used to look at the post-its, I'm looking at the post-its. You said 2.5 hours, right? We got 4 ounces, right? I'm just, with the milk burping, 2 minutes, okay. Two changes in the onesie, I got to do, okay, I'm make sure I get all that done. The minute you left, I was like, rip, rip, ribbity, rip. Throw that out. He was in the same onesie all day. The onesie was open, it was just flapping.
Bruh.
He was walking around.
Bruh.
I fed him what I wanted to feed him. If he wasn't crying, he was not getting no extra bottle. And he was fine. And when you came home and he was like, did you do everything I told you? I was like, yeah, I did it. Because it wasn't even worth it to debate about what you told me.
Let me tell y'all.
I had to survive.
Let me tell y'all. Oh, I'm about to choke myself. Let me tell y'all how far we've come, okay? Let me tell y'all how far we've come. I got a quick story. So I'm taking Cairo to a birthday party last weekend for one of his friends. Beautiful 65-degree day in Atlanta in February. You know, and I'm like, all right, I can rock with this. Coming from New York, I'm like, this is it. All right, it's lit. However, he's going to a snow tubing party. So these people brought some snow in, you know, and built these two little slides with ice and snow for the kids to slide on. So the mom messaged me and say, hey, I'm so happy that Cairo can come to the party. Just make sure that you're dressing him appropriately because we're going to be doing snow tubing. So I'm like, cool. I'm thinking snow tubing is wet. It's cold. It's ice. Let me make sure that he's dressed appropriately. So I put on some long johns on him, right? Put some sweatpants on. And then he has on his socks, his hoodie, whatever. So as we're rushing out the door because DeVal's going to drop us over to the party, I'm like, DeVal, where's Cairo's, you know, bubble coat? And he's just like, it's 65 degrees. I'm like, I know it's 65 degrees. However, A, you know how kids could be randomly there and be like, I'm cold, I'm hot, whatever. I bring the coat because I feel like I want to be prepared in the event that I need the coat, right? I, too, put on my coat because I'm always cold. So DeVal doesn't say anything. I get in the car. We go to the party. I'm at the party with Cairo. He's sliding down the slide.
when we were leaving, I was just like, why are you taking a bubble coat?
Well, yeah, because I asked you where it was and you were just like, why do you need it? It's 65 degrees. And then I was just like, I just want to bring it just in case. So then we get to the party. Cairo's going down the slide. He goes down twice. There's like mud at the bottom. So he's already instantly dirty. Cairo's pissed now because we know how Cairo stays about his clothes, y'all. He is very particular about his clothes.
Remember that point when I get here to rebut this story. But continue. Continue.
So Cairo is upset about the snow and the mud and all that. At this point, he didn't have his bubble coat on. I just had it in my hand because I wanted to make sure, you know, just in case. So at the end of the party, can I finish?
Go ahead. Finish.
So I'm there. I'm talking. You know, we're under the shade of the backyard of the people's house and whatnot. So eventually I even start to get warm. So I take my coat off. Right. So Cairo and I both have our coats and they're off to the side. So we're going back to the car now when DeVal picks us up. And DeVal could not wait to ask me if we use the bubble coat or not. We did not use the bubble coat, but you know what a mother does? A mother foresees all of the scenarios that could potentially happen.
No, you didn't.
And if I do that, what would have happened is Cairo would have been like, Mom, I want my coat. Or Mom, my sweatshirt is dirty. I want to take it off. And then I would have been ill-equipped and had to call you to come back and bring me change of clothes. So I'd rather be prepared and have the coat in the event that it got chilly.
Are you done?
And he got dirty.
Are you
and
done?
Then,
this is the longest story ever. This story is longer than story time story. I just wanted to put that out there. Because you're trying to get all your details in.
See, this is the problem, y'all. This is the problem. People just be listening with the intent to respond and not even let me get my story out.
I just wanted to be prepared
as a mom. To make sure that, okay, all of the scenarios that could potentially happen, I'd rather have it. You know the mom that has a bunch of shit in her bag?
You said all of the scenarios?
Yes.
Because you didn't prepare for the greatest scenario. And I'm shocked that you didn't prepare for this. But you know why I'm not shocked? You
want to
know why? Because you were never a boy. Okay, I was a boy. Right?
Okay, go ahead.
And I remember going to parties and my mom getting me dressed and having on khakis and a bow tie. And niggas just running around and my shit. My first thing my mother said was, don't you get them clothes dirty. It's a party. Right?
Well, that wasn't my issue. But.
No, but this is where you didn't foresee things, right? Mm-hmm. Cairo loves that Michael Jordan hoodie. He loves it, don't he?
Mm-hmm.
I would have told him, don't wear that hoodie to go slide down a thing into a barrel of hay with dirt on it. You're going to get the hoodie dirty. You know why you didn't know there's going to be dirt?
Why?
Because you're not a boy and you never slid down things.
Right. So you boys, should have took his ass to the party.
And I would have had I known about the party, but. I didn't know about the party. In any event, moms foresee things differently. And this is why it's important for parents to understand that there's no one way to do everything right, right? If we were a team in that moment, as opposed to someone saying, I got this because I'm a mom, I wouldn't have got a text message saying that Cairo's crying because his hoodie's dirty. Because daddy would have told you, don't wear them fresh J's because they're going to get dirty. Don't wear that hoodie. Because it's going to get dirty. But did mom think about that? No. You want to know why? Because mom is not a sneakerhead.
He didn't wear his Fresh Days sidebar. He wore his old Kyrie's.
I let you tell your story, didn't I? Well,
you got to rebut with the
didn't
correct
I let
facts,
you tell
DeVal.
Your story. I let you tell your story.
He did not
story.
Wear his cool grays because I was nervous about that. So, no, he didn't wear his cool grays that he loves.
Here she go, controlling the conversation. We just talked about control.
You know what happens.
We just let her talk about control.
It's not
control. The point of my rebuttal. Mm-hmm. Is that a mom can't see everything because moms don't know everything. Y'all just claim y'all know everything. Y'all don't, especially when it comes to raising boys because you've never been a boy.
Which I've said. I've
right.
admitted to that.
So, but there's a lot of moms out there who will not be honest about that and still claim they know everything and still push fathers aside while trying to raise young boys, not realizing that the greatest person to help them may be their father. You know what I'm saying? And that's the whole point of the conversation is,
yes.
Listen, understand that your spouse has a perspective. Respect their perspective, and let's not argue about who did things the right way. Which, because here's the thing, Kadeena and I didn't argue to get in the car and go to the party.
Mm-mm.
We didn't argue when we got back from the party because we both matured enough to say, hey, she's going to do what she want to do. She took him to the party. Mm-hmm. I'm going to let her walk there with the big-ass bubble coats and fumble and bubble and carry it around because I don't got to do it. Part of the reason why I be getting upset when you be carrying a whole bunch of stuff for options is I'm the motherfucker that got to carry that stuff. So we be walking through the airport and we got four kids and every kid got to have an option. I'm the one that got to carry the option while she walks around with her purse and her shades on and I'm back there fumbling with mad bags, and then she's asking me why I'm frustrated because I'm the one that has to carry your options.
Right? But I don't only carry options for the kids. I be having your back too.
You do.
And I be having stuff for you because at a random moment in time, DeVal just like, oh, I need a tissue. Oh, damn, I could use a snack. And then usually 9 times out of 10, y'all, I got that shit in my backpack, like Dora.
We're going to take a break and go pay some of these ads because this is one of those moments.
Pay some bills
where
with
I
ads.
Said this in season, I think it was season 2, when your wife thinks she know everything and you tired of arguing, you just be like, okay, babe.
This we're is not one arguing. Of those, we're having a discussion.
This is one of those moments.
We're having a discussion, y'all. This is not an argument, but.
So we're going to take a break. Come back with some listener letters if we get into y'all business. Y'all be in our business. During the break, let's quickly talk about a couple things that are important to most people I know. Comfort and style. Crocs, classic clogs, and sandals have both covered.
When I'm talking about style, I mean personal style. There are just so many colors and so many Jibbitz charms that you can add to the Crocs to make them unique. You can dress up your Crocs to match your mood, to match your personality, to fit the occasion, and you can change them up day to day.
I mean, ultimately, you can stand out from the crowd in a way that only you can because it's your personal style. And now, let's talk about comfort. You know, it doesn't get better than Crocs, clogs, and sandals when it comes to being comfortable. Style and comfort are usually a trade-off, but here, they're a package deal. It's like you have cushions on your feet. Soft, stylish, personalized, colorful cushions.
That's right. So why wait? Head over to Crocs.com today and experience the comfort and style of Crocs classic clogs and sandals for yourself. Your feet will thank you.
All right, ladies, let's be real. Who here actually enjoys shaving their legs?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought so. And get this. Nair, yes, Nair, the OG that I used for years, has now leveled up. And they have these new sensational shower creams and body creams that smell amazing. My personal favorite, coconut oil and vitamin E because it's gentle on my skin. And down to the body cream, rich cocoa butter and vitamin E body cream, which is a modern take on indulgent and classic femininity. Okay? It works in as little as 3 minutes, no nicks, no cuts, and the smooth skin lasts days longer than shaving. Nair's new sensational shower and body creams are free of all those nasty chemicals, so you can feel good about what you're putting on your skin. Have a me time moment with Nair, the number one hair removal brand. Smell for yourself. Try the reformulated Nair body and shower creams available at retailers nationwide and online.
There's power in every purchase because every time we buy a Black-led brand, we make room for another Black-led brand. And y'all know I love my lip bar products. That's just one to name a few.
There is a whole collection of Black-led products that fit into your daily routine. Show Black founders some love, not just during Black History Month, but all year long.
That's right, y'all. Black founders and the products they bring to the table are creating a whole new world of choices at Walmart.
That's right. Go to walmart.com/blackandunlimited to discover all the amazing Black-owned products you can add to your daily routine.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
All right, y'all. So now we're back for listener letters, which I think is easily becoming DeVal's favorite part of the show.
Yeah, it is. I ain't gonna lie.
Okay.
Shoot. I be wanting to get people business.
We agree
too.
On that? All right, we agree on that.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah.
Y'all. First one. Hey, DeVal and Kadeen, congrats on Dakota. Thank you. my sweet baby. He's the sweetest baby, y'all. Oh, man. Anywho, my boyfriend and I have been together for a year now, and we keep coming back to this recurring conversation. Fathering with a real father figure. Let me explain. My boyfriend feels as if, because he didn't have a real father figure, he doesn't know how to be a father to his sons. Now, I speak life into it and suggest that he learns the things that he wasn't taught and then teach his boys those things. I know in my personal experience, I've taken the things my mother taught me, and I appreciate and taught my daughter, and omitted the things that I did like in order to parent my daughter. I feel that his fear of failing as a father is crippling him. Whenever his schedule allows, we have his boys. He's a great father considering he feels like he isn't. He doesn't have it all, but his children adore him because he gives them encouragement, a safe space to be themselves and speak freely. Is there anything else I can do on my part to help him? Okay, so he has these boys outside of her. Gotcha. Well, that's nice.
Well, the first thing is, it's not your responsibility to make him feel secure about being a father. Like, you just can't do that. We've learned this
with Delana.
Yes. And we spoke about this. Like, there are two things in specifically that you can't control, is that someone else's happiness and someone else's security. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, their lack of happiness or feeling of insecurity comes from their personal experiences. Mm-hmm. And part of his insecurity comes from him not dealing with his father issues.
Right.
And men can have daddy issues too. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, especially like I said before, mentoring these young men who didn't have fathers, they come from fathers whose fathers were not there. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, like, you know, like this young man says, they feel like they don't know how to father, which is not always the case. You have to be willing to say to yourself, I know I'm going to make some mistakes along the way, but I'm going to figure out, and we're going to figure it out together. That's something I say to Jackson, Cairo, and Kaz, soon to be Dakota, all the time. Daddy makes mistakes. And I grew up with my father, my uncles, and my grandparents. Mm-hmm. So I've always had positive male figures in my life, but I still make mistakes. And every time we go through stuff and we're talking about things, like, the boys are at a point now, the minute I walk in a room, they're like at attention because they think they're in trouble. Mm-hmm. You know, because of my work schedule, for a couple of months, I wasn't home. Mm-hmm. So then when I did come home, I was always checking them on stuff that I saw wrong. So every time I walk in the room, they felt like I was doing, like they did something wrong. Mm-hmm. First of all, that was mistake number one, right? So then after a while, I was like, damn, I feel kind of bad every time I walk somewhere that they feel like they're in trouble. So I started just calling them and be like, Jackson, Cairo. They're like, what? And I'm like, come here. So then they come and I hug them and be like, did I tell you I love you today? Just so that my presence doesn't put fear in their heart.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But I also tell them, like, hey, listen, you've never been 10 before, Jackson. This is your first time being 10. You're going to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. I've never had a 10-year-old. I'm going to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. Can we make mistakes together and hug each other and figure it out? And he's like, yeah, we can. Like,
yeah.
So I think for you, young lady, continue to encourage him. But he is going to have to do the work on his own outside of you. He's going to have to, I don't know how he's going to deal with his father issues. If it's therapy, speak to his mom about what happened. But he's going to have to find a way to reconcile with not having a father if he's going to want to work on those insecurities.
I think half the battle for him, which I admire, is the fact that he even acknowledges that.
Yeah.
He realizes that there may be a deficit for him as a father.
Absolutely.
Because he hasn't had his dad. And then you talked about earlier paternal instinct kicking in the same way maternal instinct kicks in. Mm-hmm. So if he, I think, relies on that, and if they do have a healthy co-parenting relationship, I think it'll be great. And I think that he'll be okay once he, like you said, maybe gets some therapy or deals with that. But I love that he is even speaking about that, and he's interested in finding ways to be a better father. And that can be personal to him. So for example, you're not doing some of the things that you've experienced with your dad. You said, for example, with Jackson. You did something with Jackson, or you spoke to him about something recently, and you said, you know what, Jackson, I have to apologize to you because I did not go about this the right way.
Yeah.
You're apologizing to your 10-year-old. Yeah. That's something that you said your dad never did. He never apologized or admitted fault sometimes.
No.
So that's something that you've taken from your experience with your dad, and you have now said, you know what, I'm going to do it differently. Him not having
parents,
his dad there.
My father and my mom still, they don't, to this day, don't apologize. They just like, but it is what it is. Like.
Right. Yeah.
You're my child.
And you know how that affected you growing up and how you felt kind of discredited a lot along the way.
Yeah.
So now you're taking that portion of your parents, you know, away with you, and you're altering that. With him not having his father around, he can now create that life that he wants for himself and his boys. So yeah, just stick by his side like you've been, sis. Continue to speak life into him. And maybe let him know, like, you know, just because you didn't have your dad around doesn't mean that you can't now create your own path just based off of what you see fit for your sons. Right. So, cool.
That's a good one. Number two, hello. Thank you both for always keeping it 100% and for always discussing hard subjects that no one else wants to talk about. We appreciate you for listening. Thank you so much. I am writing to you both for advice because I don't know what I should do in a relationship I am currently in. I'll try to keep this email short. I'm a 28-year-old woman while my boyfriend is 30. Essentially, we work extremely well together except for his insecurities and jealousy. We have two different views on how and when to keep people in our lives. He is not friends with any of his exes along with anyone he has ever slept with. I, on the other hand, am. He knew this coming into the relationship. He does not try to stop me from hanging out with any of these friends. However, his emotions become so high at the slightest mention of it. He starts playing a bunch of scenarios in his head and tricks himself into thinking I'm playing him. He shuts down and almost immediately needs space from me. He tells me I'm not doing anything wrong, but it always feels like I am because of how high his emotions get. I have cheated before in another relationship while he never has. However, when we initially met over 10 years ago, we were in a FWB relationship. I'm not sure. Oh, friends with benefit relationship. Mm-hmm. While I was in an open relationship. I understand his perspective on things and I'm not upset with him for having them. I just don't know what to do because every time I suggest an alternative, he immediately shuts it down. What advice can you guys give me? You want to go first?
Well, again, I mean, insecurities is something that you can't control. Jealousy, you can't control. He knew what it was, apparently, when he got with you because you've explained that you guys both kept it 100 in the beginning. So that sounds like a him problem.
Yeah.
Not a you problem, sis. But to the point where it's always an argument, where it's always jealousy, it's always these scenarios that he's playing in his head. Him not being secure with himself is not something that you can teach him. And if that's going to be a detriment to you and the relationship with him, then maybe you need to reassess if this is something you even want to be a part of long term.
I think that's a really good suggestion that a lot of people don't want to hear. Right, it's like fix my relationship. Sometimes a relationship can't be fixed,
right?
Especially if one person doesn't want to fix themselves
or feel strongly about something, which he says it seems like he does.
Well, it seems as if he has insecurities. Either he was cheated on, or he watched someone be cheated on, and it affected him and it triggers him. So now he's trying his hardest to be understanding and to be, you know, accepting of her lifestyle of having a friend that she had sex with, but it's difficult.
Right.
He has to be honest with her and say, this is difficult for me. And she has to be honest with him and say, well, I'm not willing to change this.
And he has to be honest with himself, because how many times have we, or not we per se, but I know I have sometimes agreed to or signed up to things that I thought I would be okay with. And then I'm in the thick of things and I'm like, on second thought, I don't think I like this.
So question, what made you say it?
What made me say
what made you agree to something?
Because it's like sometimes you'll talk yourself into it. You'll be like, you know what? Oh, it's not going to be that bad. Or, oh, this probably is a worst case scenario. Or this may happen, but it probably really won't happen. So then you just talk yourself into thinking, all right, well, if it did happen, I'd be okay. Not really thinking it's going to happen. But when it does happen, you're like, damn, now that it's actually here, I don't think I like the way this feels.
I wonder what's that called.
Because I'm sure there's a diagnosis for that.
For example, I'm thinking about all of the things.
So you're him thinking about all the scenarios.
Yeah, but because I'm him thinking about all of the scenarios, I would say I'm not comfortable. I'm not going to think about all the scenarios and then say I'm comfortable with it and hope that that scenario don't happen. Like, that's a recipe for disaster.
Right.
Because I've learned that the hard way. Once you give someone the license to do something,
right,
saying that, okay, five things can happen if I give them this license. Of the five things, two I don't like. There's a chance that two of those things might happen. You can't say once two of those things happen, well, I didn't like this. That's unfair.
Yes.
That's not honest. That's not transparent with the person that you're dating. You know what I'm saying? So you cannot do that. And for me, that's how I've always lived my life. I'm like, listen.
So you're thinking of all 10 scenarios.
I'm thinking of all 10 scenarios. Okay. And I'm going to say, okay, of all 10 scenarios, four of these I don't like. So I don't feel comfortable with you moving forward in that direction because 10 things can happen. And then you at that point can say, all right, I appreciate your thoughts, but I'm still going to move forward doing it. And then I have to make a decision and say
if I want to stick around for that.
Or you can say, I don't
it's
like
not really worth it.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Or you can say, I don't have a good feeling about you telling me what you like and don't like, so I don't want to be in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? And, no, and the truth of the matter is, it's okay to walk away from people.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay that some people are seasonal. Some people are here just to teach you a lesson.
Yep.
It's not a failure. It's, yo, after talking for hours and hours on mm-hmm. days for months, we've realized we're not compatible.
Nope. We're trying to fit this square peg into a circle hole and it just ain't happening.
And that's okay too. So I think, you know, as long if y'all keep having conversations and realize that y'all are not compatible, it's okay to move on.
That's a fact. Save everybody some time, right?
Yes.
Shit, because that's something that we're always at a deficit for. If you want to be featured as a listener letter, be sure to email us at deadassadvice@gmail.com.
And, oh, my bad.
You forgot your part, bro. What happened?
I did, because I was thinking about my moment of truth.
Oh. I'm like, you had your coffee this
my
morning?
My bad. That's deadassadvice@gmail.com.
All right, moment of truth time. Coming off of conversation about parenting and whose way is the right way.
Here's my moment of truth, baby.
What's
up? Very simple. When two people have a baby coming from two different backgrounds, two different families, two different lifestyles, mm-hmm. right? Two different genders, mm-hmm. right? There's going to be some things that y'all don't agree on. It's going to take some months for y'all to figure it out. It may take y'all some years to figure it out. That don't mean that your relationship is a waste.
Mm-hmm.
Embrace the challenge of wanting to be with someone and raise a life together.
Mm-hmm.
And go into it excited about learning more about your spouse mm-hmm. or your significant other and being in it together to raise this child. Don't run from what people call the hard time. Mm-hmm. You know the stuff? You know, relationships are hard. It's not hard. Having constant conversations is not hard. It's very beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you and I have created a whole brand off of having these conversations. Like, we have a whole podcast. You know, mm-hmm. we're working on a bunch of different things. And I feel like people need to understand that these conversations are not taboo and they're not destructive to your relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to just
nor
have
is there a
baby.
Finish point or ending line.
Say that again. Say
nor is there a finish line or ending point
one
for
more
these
time.
Conversations.
One more time. Say one more
there
time.
Is no finish line or ending point for these conversations.
Because then they ask us this at dinner.
Yes.
When
is
does
this
it
stop?
It doesn't.
That's my moment of truth. The conversations never stop, y'all. They never stop. They always need to be had, because particularly when it comes to children, there's always a different phase. There's always something
yes.
new. They're continuing to grow for the next 18 years and sometimes mm-hmm. past 18 years of life. And then you also have to take into consideration at some point, once the children become of age, the child's feeling and how
yes.
they can see you guys interacting,
yes.
you know, and how that can affect them as well, too. So the conversations never stop. The conversations are healthy. The conversations, we hope, bring more clarity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you should also, too, keep in mind that you love this person and you decided to sit down with this person or lay down with this person
mm-hmm.
in most scenarios, particularly, you know, husbands and wives or
yeah.
people who are together, that there has to be something that you love about the person that you're with, how they were raised, how they were brought up. You may have a relationship with their family. So knowing the particular background that you, your spouse or your partner has, too, may also play a role in it.
Yeah.
The funny thing is, sometimes that may cause you to go in a different direction because you're like, damn, I don't like the way my mother-in-law, father-in-law
hey.
Did that. But at least there's an awareness and the conversation needs
nothing
to
wrong
be
with
had.
That.
Yes. You'd be like, I don't know what they did with my spouse's brother or sister, but whatever it is, I'm not signing up to it.
Yes.
All right, y'all. Be sure to follow us on social media if you're not already. So the Deadass Podcast page, I love it because people are starting to engage there
yes.
and we're trying to post more and stuff there. So
and y'all are writing
to the
some
team.
Topics for us to talk about.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We're
continue
pulling
to give
topics
us topics.
From there, so.
We would love that.
Yes.
So continue to put stuff on the Deadass the Podcast page. And then, of course, Kadeen, I am.
And I am Devout. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe.
Deadass, y'all.
Deadass. Deadass is a production of iHeartMedia Podcast Network and is produced by Denora Pena and Tribble. Follow the podcast on social media at Deadass the Podcast and never miss a thing.
You know that I feel like it's important to express yourself. You got to put your true self out there. And those classic Crocs, clogs, and sandals let you do that.
That's right. Between the rainbow of colors and the Jibbitz charms, you can create a unique look. And I mean literally, no one else will have shoes exactly like yours.
Hey, you know it doesn't get any more comfortable than the Croc clogs and sandals. They are just the perfect blend of comfort and creativity.
Visit Crocs.com to explore the latest styles and Jibbitz charms.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference.
That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule.
It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.